Welcome back to yet another edition of the Return of the Roar podcast. As always, Frankie Cardicelli, Chris Watkins joining you here. And today we are doing something a little similar to what we did last time, but also a little different as well. Last episode, if you didn't listen, we did positional breakdowns. Training camp breakdowns, just kind of going into the biggest training camp battles that we foresee going into September's training camp. Yeah. Now we're doing something, like I said, just a little bit different. We're kind of going position by position, just kind of giving our thoughts, looking at last year's, rotation, I guess, and comparing outlook. That to this year. Outlook. There we go. This is definitely more of an outlook kind of thing of where we see if the Kings have improved. Position by position, if they still need to improve, have they downgraded? You kind of get the gist. And then we're going to end today's episode with a little bit of jersey talk. So definitely stick around for that. But without further ado, let's get into point guards. Yeah?
Yeah.
Whoa. PG? Did you hear that sound?
I heard that when you slammed the table.
Yeah, right when I slammed the table, something fell outside.
So maybe the building could be falling apart.
There was a good chance.
There was a fire. That was outside a couple days ago. That was kind of crazy. So maybe things are falling apart here.
Things are definitely falling apart at this building.
1140 Studios.
I don't know. I imagine they talk about it pretty much once a week on air, at least. I've heard
that the building's falling apart.
The building is just, I mean, our building, God bless this company, but Lord, could we move buildings, please?
That'd be kind of nice. I mean, how long have they been in this building?
They've been in this building probably upwards of 20 years, I think. I mean, I've heard story. I mean, I've been here for 7 or 8 years. Since I've been here, they've talked about
moving
stories of old things that have happened in this building. And yeah, moving every seems like every couple years I hear like
is this building haunted?
That is also something that has been talked about. I think KNCI did like an overnight stay here once and like had a medium or something come here. And I think they did say that the stairs right outside the studio that we walk by.
That we walk up every day?
Yeah. They said that is like a hotbed.
I'm just stepping on some ghost every day?
I think they did say it was it did have like ghost energy or something. Big ghost energy. BGE, bro.
Was it angry or was it kind of just like, was it just vibing out to like Carrie Underwood or something?
Bro, maybe that's why I was so upset. It was like, bruh.
Turn this garbage.
I'm not calling KNCI garbage, but I'm just calling the music that they play garbage.
Well, we don't listen to country music.
Yeah, I don't listen to country, so. You don't.
Either.
Yeah, you don't. You definitely don't either.
I do not.
Anyways.
But that's kind of crazy. Yeah. So respect to the ghosts in the building
you're here. Yeah, respect to the ghosts. Please send
maybe
us big ghost vibes. We need those.
Startled it. Maybe that's what that was.
I think I honestly might have been. They're not ready to talk about these point guards. Honestly, it's because when you look at the point guards of last year and then of this year, it's the same too. I mean, De'Aaron Fox, Davion Mitchell were the only two point guards on the roster to start last season. They ended up picking up Emmanuel Mudiay for the most forgotten two games.
Tell me why I was like kind of talking myself into Mudiay being, he could be a guy's backup guard.
Mudiay looked good in his two games he played. I remember, I think he came out and like in the first 2 minutes had
two assists,
like three assists. Yeah,
right.
It was, I definitely remember being like, this is not, he's not washed by any means. And I thought it kind of looked like somebody who could, play on this team. And it was kind of interesting to me that he only lasted two games.
I mean, well, coming out of the draft in, 2014, 15? Yeah. 2015, seventh overall pick. I mean,
I remember I was like decently high on him.
With New York, he was like a four assist guy. He never really was like a big, his best year of his career was his rookie year. Kind of like. Mm-hmm.
He was drafted by the Nuggets, right?
Nuggets, yeah. And he, 13 points per game, 5.5 assists. But anyways, not to get too into Emmanuel Mudiay.
Yeah, Mudiay.
I'm just saying, I remember when the Kings brought him in, I was talking myself into, hey, like, this could work.
Something. Yeah. Third guard. I mean, and that's the kind of debate that we're going to look into this year as well. But Mudiay played two games. Also, you want to talk about forgotten games. Justin Robinson played three games at point guard for the Sacramento Kings.
That was like a who?
Yeah, I remember him getting like first quarter minutes.
And he was playing. He played.
Yeah.
Real quick though, on Mudiay. Mudiay played two games with the Kings, 11 minutes. His per 36 assist numbers are 13.1 assists per 36 minutes.
Ballin', bro.
Bring him back.
please bring him back. That's like some Rajon Rondo type numbers.
Bring him back.
Bring him back. Bring back Moutier.
No, but that's kind of crazy looking at the like the list that you put together here, just as far as I forget that they really, I mean, I know that Dante played a little bit of point guard, but I'm talking about like the list here has point guards that were playing the point guard position in more than just kind of like a break glass in case of emergency situation. So Fox and Mitchell were the only two.
The only two.
And I'm looking at this year too, and all we know right now is that one and two on the rotation chart are Fox and Mitchell again.
Yep. And then we have the Delly Cook, debate that you everybody here. Here's a nice plug here. Go check out our last episode, our last week's episode, to go hear our thoughts on the Delly versus Cook situation. Doesn't really seem like there's any clear indication of which way the team is leaning, or even like skill wise, which one the Kings should lean towards. But to your point, I think this season it's looking like more of the same, where it's just going to be a majority of Fox and Mitchell running the point. And that brings me to the question of, it's not even really a question. It's just how much better did these two get over the offseason is kind of what the Kings are banking on for their point guard position. Do you like that philosophy, or do you feel like they probably should have brought somebody in who, you know, I guess Delly and Cook could be that steadying presence, but a kind of competition for an actual point guard?
I think if we're kind of getting towards that question of do they upgrade or downgrade the point guard position this summer, I think no matter who you pick over Delly or Cook, it's an upgrade. Because when you look at last year, Fox, Mitchell to Moutier and Robinson, I mean, they don't have a backup or a third-string point guard. Mm-hmm. Bringing in Delly or Cook, you have a third-string point guard. So that automatically, to me, puts the 2022-23 team, this upcoming season's team, ahead of last year.
I agree.
Just because, I mean, we looked at it. For a couple of years now, it's been like an issue, not having a true third-string point guard. Even when Fox went down, I think in 2020, it was Bogey who was playing. He was starting point guard, point guard, maybe. So this year, I mean, I know Dellavedova again and Cook, we talked about last week, neither are a huge difference maker. And I would be very upset if either were a starting point guard on this team. But bringing Delly off the bench or Cook off the bench for 10, 12 minutes, I can live with that. Because Delly, we talked about his defensive intensity. Cook can knock down threes. There are positives. Whereas Moutier was fun just because of the fact he was drafted when like we were in college, and I want him to be good. And Robinson, who I think he had success in the G League, having Delly or Cook, that makes an upgrade in my book. Do you feel similarly, or do you?
No, definitely. I 100% agree, and I think it's just logical to assume that Davion Mitchell and I guess it's not logical to assume De'Aaron Fox will be better next season, but I believe De'Aaron Fox will be better next season. And so just kind of by virtue of progression, you would assume that this position group will be better than it was last year. By no means was the Fox and Mitchell combo bad, but I think even De'Aaron, I think every single person who watched Kings games last year could admit that De'Aaron did not get off to the best start, and that hopefully will not happen this season. So obviously the second half of last year, De'Aaron went absolutely insane. But you would assume that this season he can find some sort of steadying presence, and with Sabonis for a full offseason and for the full season in total, that they can, you know, figure things out to have De'Aaron play at the level that we saw last year. Davion's kind of the one, I don't want to say the X factor or a wild card, but you just kind of don't know. Me and Brendan have been talking a lot about, because we're not the highest on Dave. We're not the biggest. I shouldn't say we're not high on Davion Mitchell. We're just not his biggest advocates. We're not his biggest supporters in terms of like Davion Mitchell is a starting point guard who is playing backup. I think it's a fascinating case study of this guy puts in legendary amount of work. Does that necessarily 100% mean that it's going to translate to game? Because there is just like, you know, I could work my ass off every single day. Me, Chris Watkins, can work my ass off every day, and I will not. I have a certain threshold, a limit of how good I can get.
Yeah.
That's just the reality of being a human being. Everyone has their limits. Davion Mitchell is a possibly 6-foot point guard who is very strong, but really doesn't. He doesn't excel at shooting. He doesn't excel at playmaking. He doesn't excel at attacking the rim. What can he really excel at?
Yeah, it's
just, besides the obviously his defense is ridiculous, but how long can he keep that up, and is that good enough to make him stand out in the league?
Well, I mean, when he has Fox on the roster, I guess it's kind of easier. I don't want to say hide. Shout out Brendan on the hiding people comment. The little Tyrese Halliburton callback.
I poke at him all the time.
We love you, Brendan. But I think it's easier to kind of, not hide, but hide him and not have to worry about him being that guy until De'Aaron goes down with an injury. Like we saw last year, Davion did, he rose to the occasion. He was a 20-point-per-game scorer. He was dishing out 5-6 assists per game. So he did prove it in a small sample size that he could kind of plug that hole, but long-term, I'm not sure. And I saw someone last night on Twitter, I think it was Rory. It's a at Big Roar Dog on Twitter. It's a guy I talk to sometimes on Kings Twitter. He said that the tweet said, I hate to break it to you all, but the Kings don't have plans of building around Fox and Davion long-term because they went out and they got Kevin Huerter and Malik Monk for the next 2-4 years. So why would they go get two guards? Davion's already 23. That's going to take you through Davion's, age 27, 28 season, having 4 years of Kevin Huerter. So I guess it kind of makes sense to me that maybe the Kings aren't fully enamored with pairing Fox and Mitchell, because otherwise, why would they go do that? I mean, how do you view that? Because I never really thought about it that way.
I don't really see how the two connect. I personally, and this was my issue with them initially drafting Davion, I think Davion's just a backup point guard. I don't mean that as an insult. I kind of mean it as a compliment, but I just think he's a really, really solid backup point guard. And he should try and make him a starter, I think, would be foolish. I think he would be a bottom tier starter in the league, but I think he definitely has an elite skill being defense. I think if he can learn to hit threes, he can be a value on offense. But where he stands right now, I just think he's a perfect backup point guard. And I just don't really see how the addition of Huerter and Monk, for sure, that might stunt Davion's ability to play the two. But again, I was never really a believer that someone who's under 6 feet or at 6 feet tall could really realistically start next to Fox. I always thought that was a huge issue. That is crushing if you believe, because I do think a lot of people do believe that the Kings' plan was to start both Davion and Fox.
Because they traded Tyrese and they thought, okay, well, I guess it's Davion and Fox then, right? But now that's what I'm saying. I think we're saying kind of similar things. I don't know if the Huerter thing does come in. It doesn't really change that, I guess, in a way. But it doesn't change if he is what you're saying, a backup point guard. The Kings do view him as a backup point guard that can, in a break glass situation, take over and start for 10, 15 games or so. Yeah. But I don't know. We might be sitting here in 2 months when Davion's averaging 16 off the bench or whatever. Or maybe he's completely done something that's thrown egg on our faces. But I kind of like the idea of Davion just being that long-term kind of bench piece. But it's hard to tell if he is someone that's going to be a starter. I mean, because again, the Kings kind of have those two spots locked down, which we're going to go to next. But Monk and Huerter, I mean, that's pretty locked in there. So and you look at the point guard spot. If De'Aaron's going to be here throughout the rest of his contract, which we hope he is, and at a high level, I mean, there's too many cooks in the kitchen. No pun intended, Quinn Cook.
I think that's a good way of putting it. And I think, I've always viewed Davion as a backup point guard, and I think he can really be a top level backup point guard. But again, I kind of think if you're going to put him at a starting spot, he's just going to be a bottom, he's not going to be in the top 20 of starting point guards, I don't believe, in the league. He's been countlessly compared to Patrick Beverley. Patrick Beverley is a perfectly fine player. I mean, I think he started last season for the T-Wolves.
Apparently, he's going to start next to Russell Westbrook.
Apparently, he's going to start next season. We've seen Patrick Beverley as a starter, but has anyone ever said, Patrick Beverley is a top-tier point guard in the league? No, I don't even think anyone would have ranked him in the top 15 of the league.
And I think because he has been, and I think we compare Davion to two players, Patrick Beverley and Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart's kind of been a player who broke out of that
this
mold.
Season,
Now was defensive player of the year, and he also, I think he's a starter. He's a bona fide starter now. He's going to start probably for the rest of his career, I'd imagine. But before that wasn't the case. And Patrick Beverley's kind of that player, which I think Davion could maybe be like a Swiss Army knife. Like, mm-hmm. he can start in some spots, but I think he's best in a bench role.
Yeah.
And can be like the energy guy. And there's totally. So many different things that he could bring off the bench that the Kings need, which the Kings haven't had. Like, mm-hmm. Buddy Hield, the Kings kind of wanted him to be that energy guy off the bench, and that just never happened. Yeah. It just wasn't the way it was going to go with him ever. He never wanted to be a bench piece. Bogey was kind of that, but the energy wasn't really there. Bogey's just kind of a smooth player, calm. Yeah. Davion's a guy who's always running.
Could set the tone.
Crazy motor on him. So I just think that it's very intriguing long-term to me in a backup role. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, I would say it's going to be 100% they pick up his option for next year.
I would assume so, yeah. He hasn't been tragic or anything.
No, that's coming next month, so.
Yep, I definitely agree. Let's move on to that shooting guard position you were just talking about earlier. Starting off last season, the shooting guard rotation was one Tyrese Haliburton, who is obviously gone, Buddy Hield, who was shipped with him, and Terrence Davis, who only played the first half of the season after, did he hurt his wrist? What was it last season that he ended up hurting and missing?
TD.
Yeah.
He fractured his wrist.
Yeah. Yeah, so he missed.
During the 50-point loss in Boston.
Gosh. I want to black that game, like, out of my memory completely.
I can't believe we had to watch the whole thing.
And then the following night, the Atlanta game, too, where they were up and then just completely blew the game.
It was...
I think they ended up losing that game by 20 or 30
as well. 17.
Oh, felt like 30.
Then they lost to Philly. They blew a lead late. It was the game where Tyrese had a career high.
Was the Philly game the one where nobody played? None of the Philly guys played?
No, that was on the road where they did play, and we were beating them, and Tyrese had that crazy three in the corner to give him like a four-point lead or something, and they blew it. The one at home, that was probably the most disappointing.
Yeah. That was really epically terrible.
After Luke got fired. And they're in control the whole game. Anyways, no more Pain Olympics.
No. That was the 2021 start of the season rotation. And then obviously after Tyrese and Buddy got shipped off, it ended up being Dante DiVincenzo, who finally ended up, I actually don't remember how many games Dante ended up starting. I remember complaining relentlessly that Justin Holiday started so many games.
Dante started, I want to say, one game with the Kings.
God, that's terrible. See, so, and then I'll have to move this. Justin Holiday was the starter at shooting guard for the Kings. Dante would come off the bench. Jeremy Lamb really only kind of got minutes when he first arrived in town and then kind of never got minutes again. Since last season, the Kings have cut Jamias Ramsey, so he is no longer a part of the Kings' future. He was also a shooting guard, also didn't get much time last season. And I believe Ade Murky is back with Stockton. He only came up once last season.
Game or two.
And, you know, I'm not trying to say Ade isn't a great player or anything, but I believe the only reason that happened is because he's signed with De'Aaron Fox's agency, his Family First or whatever. Mm-hmm. He's one of his, Chris Gaston, I believe, is De'Aaron's agent. He's one of his clients. So if I had to guess, it was kind of one of those... make good by our star kind of things. This season, entering this season, obviously this has been the biggest additions to the Kings roster this offseason. One, Kevin Huerter, I almost called him Malik Huerter. Kevin Huerter and Malik Monk step in to the starting two positions. You can check out last week's episode to figure out what our thoughts are on that position battle. And then after them is TD as well, who we just kind of don't know where he's going to fit. I think we also talked about that in last episode.
Yeah, he's playing small four, which could be an option. Mm-hmm. That's very likely to
me. Yeah, definitely, because I think he's probably going to be the third option at shooting guard.
Flexibility.
Not a lot of minutes. And then Keon Ellis, Brendan Nunez's guy.
Favorite
Keon
player.
Ellis, who probably won't get much minutes, but is still, you know, slated in that two-guard role. When we're talking about upgrade or downgrade from last season, I think clearly Tyrese Haliburton is the best player of... No, I shouldn't say clearly, actually. I think Tyrese Haliburton is the best player of the Huerter...
All of them on the list,
Everyone that we just listed, I would say Tyrese is the best player.
But it's what comes after.
Exactly. And that's, I think, where the Kings were banking on this season with depth. Would you rather have Tyrese Haliburton and Buddy Hield or Malik Monk and Kevin Huerter? Curtin, Huerter.
It's so tough because, like, I mean...
It's kind of a push.
If I could, like, on this roster, like, have Tyrese with Sabonis, yeah, I'd probably go with having Tyrese and to kind of deal with Buddy. But, I mean, realistically, I think that Tyrese, Buddy, and TD last year is depth, and then Justin Holiday later on, Jeremy Lamb, Dante, like, Dante was fine. I think having Huerter, Monk, TD, even Ellis is a two-way. Like, I think that... I think it's an upgrade. I mean,
think the depth for sure.
I think the depth is way. I mean, look at that. Like, if any of Monk or Herter go down, having TD as your third string shooting guard on going to training camp is kind of crazy to me.
Yeah.
And I know that was kind of the case last year, but TD kind of played. He was kind of in the rotation in a couple of different positions last year. He even had a couple spot PG minutes, which I'm like, what? Yeah. Like, so I think having a player like TD who kind of can be that utility man, which is kind of what I talked about last week. Small forward, shooting guard. He can play point guard for maybe like a set or two, nothing more than that really. But having that depth and having a true, true shooting guard, Malik Monk, who gets to be reunited with De'Aaron Fox. Having Kevin Herter, who also kind of falls in that mold. He's 6'7", can play a couple of different positions. It just makes too much sense to me to say it's an upgrade. I mean, I know losing Tyrese is tough, but you know, if I could wave a magic wand, having him on a team with Sabonis and Fox, I mean, there are concerns with that too, though, because there's one basketball, like we always talk about, the classic, the 2011 Miami Heat thing. There's only one ball. And the 2022 Kings are pretty much the 2011 Heat.
Yeah, when I think of 2011 Heat or 2016 Warriors,
2008 Celtics,
2023 Kings, probably right after.
Like the new big three of Herter, Sabonis, and Fox.
Yep.
On that level. But no, I think from a depth standpoint, they've upgraded it. And it's a position that I'm most excited to see how Mike Brown is going to make that work, how the rotation is going to work with Herter and Monk, who will start, how many minutes will the player that comes off the bench get, and then what do you do with TD? So I think that's a clear upgrade.
Yeah, I'm I don't know if I'm willing. I think it's at worst a push. I think everything you said is totally right, and I think the depth is definitely something to be considered. In terms of fit, absolutely Herter over Tyrese. If we're talking players, I think it's probably even, or if not, you know, edge to Tyrese. The Monk buddy thing, again, is kind of a push. Those two guys both have their pluses and definitely have their minuses, and you just kind of deal with one to get the other. It's to me, I think the biggest thing is this is not a downgrade for sure. And that's, we're going to go through it, but I feel like this is the position, obviously, with the most turnover. And when you have a lot of turnover, a lot of the time it's a lot of question marks on, hopefully, you know, if there was no Kevin Herter, if it was just Malik Monk, we're like, I hope Malik can be a good starter. But, there's definitely the possibility that he's just kind of Buddy Hield 2.0. But with the addition of Herter and Monk, I just really like that depth. I think that solidifies the position, and it really could end up saving the Kings season. I think, you know, if one of those guys goes down, like you said, I think having TD as your backup then, or Keon Ellis as your third string, I think that's a lot better situation than you were last year for sure.
It's favorable.
Definitely.
And no offense to your boy Jeremy Lamb, but...
No thanks.
I'm good on the Jeremy Lamb project.
So good on Jeremy Lamb minutes. The Herter and Monk upgrade is clearly an upgrade over the Justin Holiday, Dante DiVincenzo backcourt that they were running out last year, which is really what matters because that's the team that's kind of going to come out this year.
I forgot about Justin Holiday. What did he finish with his Kings numbers?
I would guess 23 starts, and I would guess maybe like 7 to 9 points a game.
He started all 25 of his games here, 25 minutes per game. He averaged 8 points per game.
Boom, I think I said 7 to 9.
Yep, 34% from the field.
Ooh, 34% from the field?
34 from the field and 34 from the three. All I took was threes probably.
34% for the field is criminal. You should not be – he should have been pulled like 10 games into that. 34% from the field.
Taking 6 threes per game.
That is atrocious. So
yeah.
I can guarantee that the Monk-Herter combo will – neither of those two will do that.
Where we ended last season – because, again, that was no Buddy, no Tyrese. Where we ended last season, which it's just – it's night and day.
Yeah, it's night and day.
It's
completely.
Night and day.
And it's just clearly an upgrade. The team
– The Tyrese-Buddy thing's a conversation. Mm-hmm. This isn't a conversation.
No, not at all. Not at all. And I think that's the thing to feel positive about is, again, like – The post-trade shooting guard position was very, very bleak, and now it's a position of strength. And that is a reason to believe that the Kings will be better this season, you know, for sure. Now let's move on to the small forward position. This is where things got a little murky. No
pun intended.
No pun intended to a day murky. Small forward starting last season, Harrison Barnes, Lou King, Robert Woodard.
Woof.
Woof. Post-trade, Harrison Barnes. I had to have you look this up. Chimezie Metu got a lot of backup 3 minutes, as well as Mo Harkless, who kind of, you know, Mo didn't play a lot in the second half of last season, but when he did, it was generally at the three and at the four. And he like I said, didn't get many minutes, so I put him in that three spot. To start this season, going into training camp, we have HB, KZ Akpala, Chimezie Metu, who, again, we talked about.
Some power forward, too.
I think we talked about him a little bit last episode as well, just kind of trying to find a, much like Terrence Davis, honestly, kind of just trying to find a position for Mezzi for him to get minutes. Chima Moniecki, and here I have Keegan Murray, question mark?
Question mark.
Could Keegan Murray play not the backup small forward position, because obviously that means Keegan's probably going to play like 35 to 40 minutes a night, which probably is, I can almost guarantee, is not going to happen his rookie season. But can Keegan give us 5 to 10 minutes, probably five, more leaning towards 5 minutes at the three position?
I think it's like a matchup basis. Like it Keegan Murray's what, 6'9"?
Yeah.
I mean, 200? What is he? I don't know what he weighs, but I believe it was more than I thought. Mm-hmm. But he still is a rookie. He's probably going to get targeted on the defensive end, even though he is a strong defender on paper. In college, he was a really good defender. In summer league, he held his own. But in some situations, I think we could see him be slid up to the three and just kind of deal with the smaller guys while HB takes on the bigger, the fours, the stronger players. So,
let's say HB goes down. For knock on wood, let's say HB goes down. Does Keegan Murray play the three and Lyles slide up to the four?
I think
Lyles go into the four?
I think we could see something pretty interesting if that happens, for sure. Because when you look at, and again, I think that Mike Brown's a big Chimezie Metu guy. And I talked about that with you.
We'll see.
Recently, I would not be surprised if hypothetical HB goes down with a quad injury for 3 weeks. I could see them going Murray at the three and Mezzi at the four. That doesn't mean I think Mezzi's the backup three, because there's a lot of names on here. I mean, we also, Kent Bazemore, he hasn't been signed yet.
That's true, yep.
So we haven't really put him in.
I was going off basketball reference. Well,
Been signed yet. Yep. And like that's why I'm saying he's technically not on the roster right now.
But Sam Merrill also did not make an appearance on this list.
Again, Kent Bazemore. Sorry, Sam.
Sorry, Sam.
Kent Bazemore could be someone that could play. In my opinion, the Kings would probably use him more at the three because they have the shooting guard spots locked up. But I have a hunch that Chimezie Metu is going to be playing meaningful minutes in one of these spots here. And to me, it could mean backup three. And we talked about Mezzi last week about things we like and we don't like. But if it's just tough for me to kind of think about a better situation. If HB goes down for a long period of time, yeah, you could have Trey Lyles play power forward and have Keegan Murray move up to the three, but Metu's going to have to play somewhere and play some minutes.
Does he?
I think so.
Does he have to play?
I think so.
I don't think he has to. As you know, I am not the biggest Chimezie Metu supporter.
Not a Chimezie stan, huh?
Definitely not a stan. I would rather see what KZ Akpala could bring. And, you know, if we're talking HB going down, we're kind of at crisis alert number 7 here, 7 out of 10. Because, you know, the depth at the small forward, to me, this is the weakest position group for the Kings, which is very unfortunate because how many times on this podcast have I had to talk about how important the small forward position is? I think I would be very concerned if Harrison has to miss any time or, you know, whatever. Even the backup three position does concern me. I completely forgot about the Kent Bazemore signing. That makes me feel a little bit better. I do think Kent can give you 10 to 15 minutes of solid three, but you know, I don't know if that's an ideal position. I definitely think if this team is gonna make an upgrade this season, I would definitely hope that it would be to a backup small forward.
And maybe come January, February, that's the move they look to make.
Yeah.
Maybe they look to try to target a backup three, or maybe a future three, because again, HB Could be. I mean, maybe he gets an extension locked in before opening night. That could happen. It's happened before with other players in the Kings. Shout out Buddy Hield. But it's kind of like interesting to look at it that way because the Kings do need – you talked about how important the small forward position is. They don't have really – I mean, unless it's Keegan, unless they're planning on it being Keegan. So.
Even to your point of them playing Metu, like Metu's not a three. He's a four.
No, he's a 4-5.
I think he should be a five. Yeah, I personally think he should be a five. But to have Metu playing the three position, like that's a sign of how desperate this team could potentially get at the three position.
Because people out there might be screaming like, Shemezi's not a three.
Oh, I agree.
But I'm just letting you know that he's going to play. He played three last year in some spots, and he's going to be plugged into some other situations next year where we're going to be like, what? So I think the Kings' number one target, what this roster really needs is, again, not a shocker. We've talked about it all summer long. They need another forward. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how they come across that. But as far as upgrade or downgrade this position, I'm going to say upgrade because I like the upside of Ukpala. Keegan Murray, he is going to play some small forward. I think that he said on draft night and during summer league that he thinks he's a 3-4 and he can play both. I think he's going to play both. So when you look at even half of Keegan Murray, KZ Ukpala, Kent Bazemore over Bob Woodard, Liu Kang, Harkless was fine sometimes, but I just like the Kings have more options this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's just kind of an upgrade by default. If you're going to pull out Liu Kang, who is still getting summer league buckets, and Bob Woodard, who probably won't make a roster this. Actually, he definitely won't make an NBA roster. I think we saw him play for San Antonio's G League team in summer league. Not entirely sure he's going to get a spot there. And then, you know, post trade, like you said, was HB, Mezzi, and Harkless. Just the depth. I mean, again, not that it's great depth, but the fact that you have the bodies of Ukpala, of Bazemore, like that, those are fringe NBA players, and you know that's better than two guys who just straight up aren't
in the league at all. Absolutely, well put.
Yep. So moving on to power forward, this is how the Kings started last season at power forward. Also, had you look this up, this is probably a good trivia question for a lot of Kings fans. Who started game one at power forward last season for the Sacramento Kings?
It's a great question.
I had no idea. The only thing I remembered, the only reason why I knew it wasn't Marvin Bagley was because I had to remember his agent's statement about how ludicrous it was that Marvin wasn't starting and how the King, you know, that set off
that
the whole
so
Marvin
funny.
Bagley trying to
We're
get
sitting
traded.
There night the night before, the it was like night, at 9 p.m.
I think the Kings had a practice. Like, let's say the game was on Friday. I think they had a practice on Thursday. They went to practice. They did like whole press thing, and then like an hour after practice, his agent revealed. If I'm not mistaken,
it might have
even been like an hour before practice or something.
No, it was like I think that we went to practice on a Monday morning.
Okay,
and they left for Portland later that night. No, I'm sorry. Tuesday morning. Game was on Wednesday. So Tuesday morning, we're at practice. They were leaving for Portland like right after practice. Mm-hmm. And it was that evening. It was that night.
Yeah.
And then the next day, we, you know, obviously they didn't let us ask any questions about it. But I mean, how can you?
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, if you're going to release a public statement, you should probably reply publicly.
I just remember thinking how like, wow, it's crazy. The Kings went a whole offseason without any drama.
Yep.
And they said, oh.
Day zero.
Boom. Night for opening night. Nah.
Let it drop. Yeah, but answer to the trivia question, Maurice Harkless started game one at power forward. He also started quite a bit of the first half of the season at power forward. Marvin Bagley got his chances at power forward. Chimezie Metu got his chances at power forward. Tristan Thompson didn't play much for the Kings last season, but he also got minutes at power forward. That was really their rotation until the trade, where they eventually traded for Trey Lyles as well. He started a good amount of games in the second half of the season at power forward. Mo backed him up, and then again, Mezzi kind of would find spot minutes here and there at the three and the four. Going into this season, it's not quite clear what the pecking order is going to be, but it's going to be some version of Keegan Murray, Trey Lyles, and Chimezie Metu. Is there a chance that Trey Lyles starts game one?
I'd be very surprised. I just feel like Trey Lyles, what he brings, I just feel like he's not a starting four. I mean, the athleticism isn't really there. I mean, I saw him get up for a couple of those big dunks. Don't get me wrong. But, and I'm not saying that Trey Lyles is unathletic. I mean, he's in the NBA, for God's sake. So I just think that when the Kings are looking at their four positions, I think having Barnes and Murray interchangeable, they can both play small forward and power forward. I think that's super valuable. Mm-hmm. I think that Murray, I mean, he's your fourth overall pick. He needs a start. I mean,
there's no need to mess around.
What we saw in Summer League, start him. Mm-hmm. He probably is one of the better players on the team already. Mm-hmm. So play him and play him big minutes.
I agree. I think the only reason why the Kings wouldn't start Murray and start Trey would start Trey Lyles is just because, you know, weird things like that happen sometimes where it's just like the team feels like they don't want to give him too much too soon for whatever reason. And I'm kind of just thinking of excuses at this point because you're completely right. There's no reason why Keegan shouldn't start game one. Everything he's shown, his demeanor, nothing about him seems like he'd be the type of dude who would get too much too soon. I think he'd take it all in stride. And
What are the Magic going to do with Paolo? Start him. What would the Thunder do if Chet wasn't hurt?
Exactly.
Start him. So what? We haven't won anything in almost 20 years. What's the difference? What are we acting like we're special for?
Yep.
Which is what drove me crazy over the years about when the Kings would draft. I mean, even
De'Aaron Fox.
De'Aaron, Marvin. Like, people that should be starting day one. They're your top draft pick. Like, you're putting the future, you're leveraging years of the future for these players. And they're winning these awards, like Keegan MVP, Summer League. 20 points, start him. And I think he will. I think Mike Brown is smart enough to know that. I don't think he's going to start. Again, we said that it's a possibility, a scary possibility that Mezzi could be like a starting power forward or something. I don't want to open that door. But I think it makes too much sense to have Murray be the starting four. And I like the idea of going with Trey Lyles off the bench. Again, though, Mike Brown is a Chimezie Metu guy. And I think he's going to get minutes somewhere.
We'll see.
So it could be like a...
Not if I have anything to say about it.
Like how... Yeah, I know. What are you...
I'm just going to ask him every day. Every time we get Mike Brown, I'm just going to be like, you played Chimezie today.
Why?
Just what was the thinking there? You know Trey is also on the bench.
Just want your thoughts on it real quick.
Just
want your thoughts on it real quick. I think it could be kind of like what we saw with Damian Jones, Alex Len. Like, okay, one night, Damian Jones is backup center.
I think that's a great way of putting it.
I think that Chimezie could be the backup power forward sometimes, and we could see Trey Lyles a couple times. It's just going to be, again, I keep saying it, but it's a matchup basis for these guys. But the things that should not change is who's your starting two guard. They need to figure that out. I think Herter. And they need to figure out starting power forward / small forward. And I think that it should be, no matter which one, you can, I don't care.
Yeah.
Small forward, power forward, Harrison Barnes, Keegan Murray. Positionless, both play forward. I don't care about the power small part. So.
I completely agree. In terms of upgrade or downgrade, I think it's clearly an upgrade. I mean, Keegan is better than Mo Harkless. He's better than Marvin Bagley. He's better than Chimezie. He's better than Tristan Thompson.
Hey. Better than Tristan Thompson?
TT?
Come on, man.
Come on, TT.
Come on, man.
My boy TT?
Come on.
Tristan's got some off-the-court things he's got to figure out.
Is he on a team right now? I don't think he's on a team right now.
I don't think so either.
He said, didn't he say he was going to retire when he was going through the...
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he sent that DM to that
girl,
the Snapchat message.
The girl that he, had a baby with.
Yeah.
She, posted that. Well, he said, I'm going to retire at the end of the year.
Yeah.
But I don't think he did.
No, I don't think officially. But, that'll be interesting. I don't think Tristan did anything special for Chicago.
Dude,
I didn't watch too much Chicago.
He's got Lakers written all over him.
I don't know if TT can hang out in L.A. anymore. I think, I think it's Charlamagne the God says, the devil works hard, but Kris Jenner works harder.
Dude, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I don't know how, but she... No, you know, some blame's got to go on Tristan for
runs
this.
New York. She runs New York on some hip hop.
Yeah.
Anyway. let's just move on. We don't need to talk about TT anymore. We're talking about center now. Center going into last season was Rashawn Holmes, Alex Len, Damian Jones, and Nemias Cato on his two-way contract. Post Sabonis Halliburton trade was obviously Domantas Sabonis, Rashawn Holmes when he could play, Damian Jones got a ton of run in the second half of last season, obviously is now in L.A., and Alex Len and Demias Cada are also still on the squad, or were still getting minutes here and there on the squad. And going into this year, we have much of the same, pretty much, with the subtraction of Damian Jones. It's Domantas Sabonis, Alex Len. I don't know why I said Alex Len first. Rashawn Holmes will probably be the backup, and Demias Cada will still be on his two-way contract. I have here written down, is this the Kings' strongest group?
On paper, this is the strongest position.
Yeah.
But as soon as one of Holmes or Sabonis goes down, and knock on wood, I hope they don't the whole year, it kind of changes things. But if this is, if the Kings have, if I could, you know, wave a magic wand, I say that a lot, and have Sabonis and Holmes play all 82, it's the best 1-2 punch starting bench center in the NBA. Like, there's no bench combination that's better.
No.
As far as bench and starting, not the Gobert, Town stuff. I'm talking about going from your starter to your backup. Mm-hmm. And if Holmes can reinvent himself to be the backup we saw in Phoenix, Philly, even for a little bit there, be half the player he was in the Kings starting lineup when he was really thriving in a starting role, the Kings are going to be a problem down low. I mean, and obviously defense is the question. Can Sabonis and Holmes both take a step forward on that end of the floor? But I think when you look at what they both can bring offensively, it's going to make a difference, and it's going to be defense. Can you play defense under Mike Brown and improve that part of your game?
Yeah, I agree. I think to your point exactly. I think defense is my biggest question with the Sabonis Holmes 1-2 punch, as well as can Rashawn Holmes return to, like you said, the days in Philly, the days in Phoenix when he was coming off the bench, because obviously when he was a starter for the Kings, he was great. I mean, he was super solid. He was, you know, getting 20-10 games almost every night in his first season as a starter, and we've seen, you know, last season, obviously a lot of things going on off the court for Rashawn. Just didn't play too many games down the stretch. It'll be interesting to see how he can readjust to coming off the bench. And also, I think a big thing is he's not going to have Tyrese Haliburton, who is always, always looking for Rashawn Holmes. And, you know, was definitely a big reason for a lot of Rashawn's success when they played together. Ooh, sorry, I had to take a big gulp there. Do you think Rashawn can return to that form, or is he kind of one of those guys that needs his minutes to get the amount of opportunities that he was afforded?
Yeah, I think he can get back to it. I think that we will see them play together a little more than we might.
That's what
think.
I think.
And I think that Mike Brown apparently is a huge Rashawn Holmes guy. And I mean, Rashawn, he's been one of the most loved Kings in the past couple of years, and there was some off-the-court stuff, which has now been resolved, which is great for Rashawn that he can kind of clear his conscience of that. The injuries last year were tough for him. He was dealing with, I mean, one of the worst years of his, I would imagine, his life so far.
No, life, definitely.
So
all of it together, yeah, 100%.
And the fact that he loses his starting job, and he has countless head injuries, and then the off-the-court stuff.
True. I forgot about the actual injuries as well, getting poked in the eye twice last season.
Like two games apart, he comes back from missing 2 weeks, and then he gets poked again, same eye, and misses like a month. So the fact that he's going to be able to come back with a clear mind, he knows his role, he got his contract, so he's still being paid well. I think he'll be pretty happy. I mean, no matter how you slice it, I mean, he's going to be a big part of his team, and I'm sure that Mike Brown has made that clear to him, which is why we haven't heard any whispers or rumors of a Rashawn Holmes wants out of Sacramento thing. Because, I mean, notable situations – when you bring in somebody to take your spot, you usually want to be traded. And we haven't heard anything about that. No. And I don't think that is the case. And now that we see Mike Brown come in and we see Rashawn Holmes go to his welcome press conference and he's in attendance, which that was kind of surprising to me. I thought he was gone at the time. I think I tweeted on the last game Rashawn played, this is the last time we're going to see him. That's a freezing cold take. So I think when you look at what he can bring, if he can really buy in and be the backup center that we know he could be, if he buys in, it's a huge win.
Definitely. I was just looking at his splits, and like, it's interesting. As a reserve, his minutes or his production is pretty much split in half, but it's also
first career.
Yeah. He's got 216 games off the bench, 160 as a starter. But it's also, I mean, almost directly correlated to his minutes played. As a starter, he averages 30 minutes a game, 13 points, 8 rebounds. As a reserve, 15 minutes, so almost exactly half the minutes, 7 points, 4 rebounds. Just about half the points, just about half the rebounds. So it's interesting to me how, yeah, I mean, his play is almost directly correlated to the amount of minutes he gets. But if he can give us 8 and 5 off the bench and, you know, a block a game, I think that's a very, very great backup center, especially in today's NBA where, like you said, there's just not much depth from most teams at center. I think that could be a real position of strength for the team this year.
So we're going upgrade, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, it's an upgrade. Definitely from the start of last year, for sure, with the addition of, I mean, you're just adding in Sabonis. There's really no change besides Sabonis from last year to this year. Here's a question, though. Do you honestly, truthfully, no clickbait, do you believe Nemias Keita can find a role this year and get, you know, that doesn't mean he's going to play 82 games, but can he play 50, 40 games this year?
I mean, I would over under for him.
Let me see how many games he played last year.
Give me 28 and a half.
Last season, he played 14 games.
I'm going to double that. I'm going to say 28 and a half is like the over-under. I would say I go like over, like maybe 29, 30 games, because I do think that the way the NBA works, I hope not for long, but there might be some situations where Sabonis or Holmes are going to need a night here and there or some time. And having Keita, his shot blocking, like just the ability he could bring, and if he really can tap into that full potential, he was a monster near the end of summer league before he got hurt. I just really think the Kings are high on him. I think that they're going to kind of prioritize him getting minutes, even over Alex Len, who's on an expiring deal now. I think Alex Len could be someone who we could see as a potential wave down the line or a buyout trade, whatever you want to call
it. Alex Len's a solid backup center. I think any team would be very happy to take him on as well.
Yeah, but if Keita has to prove it that he deserves to get those minutes for sure. I mean, absolutely. For sure, though. So we're going to keep an eye on him in Stockton. And I think that they're 28 and a half, 29. Yeah, I mean, play the kids, play the young guys.
Yeah, for sure. So we're going upgrade?
I'm going upgrade. I mean, Sabonis and Holmes versus Holmes and Len out of the gate. I mean, when you look at opening night to opening night, it's a total win, upgrade from last year.
So if I'm doing the math correct, we had upgrade on every position with the exception of shooting guard, which I said is push, but also you laid out the case for it being an upgrade. Definitely no downgrades.
No, I mean, I guess point guard even was, I think it's a, I guess it could be a push for point guard, but yeah, I'm saying upgrade just because of the fact that we will have a third string point guard. I mean, I'm not saying.
And presumably those guys will be better.
Yeah, so here we are saying the Kings have upgraded every position. So yeah, I guess we're announcing the playoff drought's over, right?
I mean, not necessarily, and that's, I guess, that's an interesting topic is, can the Kings find success without finding the playoffs? Because, no. What'd they finish, 32 wins last year?
30 on the dot, right?
30. We're asking this team to potentially get
10 more games.
10 more wins. That's a huge
swing. I don't know,
swing.
But if you think about the games that they just completely blew and just like I'm looking at the,
for sure. I mean that happens. Like definitely. I hear what you're saying.
I don't need to go through every game, but they're like the Hornets game. First of all, the Hornets game is the top of that list. The missed free throw stuff. There are games they could have had. They're there for the taking. I mean that's every game in every sport that's ever been played. But I think just being able to flip flop, you know, 4 or 5 points some of these games is possible with a better roster. So
I hear you. I just think it is. Maybe one team makes that kind of leap from year to year.
Why not us?
It could be us. Exactly. Why not us?
Someday it's going to be.
I just don't know if, and you know, time will tell. I'm not sure the additions they made are a plus 10 win additions.
No.
And what to your point, maybe they switch, let's say we switch 4 games from last year. So now they have 34 wins. 6 wins even. That's nothing. That's not insignificant. I just think we just need to. I think expectations are definitely tempered. I haven't heard anyone say the Kings are going to win 45, 50 games this year.
Mark Spears.
I do think that there's a chance that they win 45 games.
Oh,
but I'm not out here saying.
Did you see, like, Chris Mannix also said that he's a lot of national.
Guys, the Kings hype train is beginning.
But that's scary.
We are putting coal into the. I have no idea how steam engines work. We're putting coal into the fire pit. I don't know.
But do you remember the last time this happened? 2020, after the 2018, or 2019, I guess. After 18-19, when they almost won 40 games and they seemed like they were on the cusp of breaking through.
Yep.
So many. Like preseason polls and predictions of the Kings making the playoffs. Make it like the 7 seed. 7-8 seed. Like the Kings are like what the Grizzlies are. Like we were supposed to be what the Grizzlies are now. And the fact that I'm seeing Chris Mannix and you know, Mark Spears, I think he's a local guy, right?
So it's he's from the Bay Area.
Local love. But the national stuff is kind of scary to me because expectations, we haven't had any for a while. So now we're kind of slowly getting those again, but how can you not when you have the names we have on our team? Mm-hmm. I mean, De'Aaron Fox, Domantas Sabonis, Kevin Herter, Malik Monk, those aren't nobodies in NBA. Those are NBA players. So we'll see what happens. Upgrades, though. Upgrades across the board for the most part.
Yep. Will there be an upgrade on the Sacramento Kings jersey? This is something that is always, always a bunch of talk about during the offseason. I think in the past 4 years since the NBA has switched to Nike, every single year there's been new jerseys. Obviously, there's the city editions and the county editions and the legacy edition, all of these editions of jerseys that end up coming out. And for the most part, I have been incredibly underwhelmed. I thought last year was the best alternate jersey the Kings have had in a while. They have not switched up their main jerseys in a good amount of time. How confident are you this season that they're going to deliver something that
like their home and away or their
I think we probably would have heard if they're like completely switching off their home and away jersey, but just for the alternate, we'll say.
So their city edition,
city whatever. Yeah.
Well,
whatever.
I've spoken to hashtag multiple sauces. And I've talked to somebody who's involved in the process, and they're not going back to the old. The 02 classics that everyone wants really bad. And I put a tweet out that really generated. I didn't mean to attack the people that are involved with this process.
You and your propaganda.
I was spilling the bring back the 02 classics. I mean, they are the best jersey that the Kings have had. And everyone's bringing back their classic jerseys, though. Yeah. Like the Phoenix Suns are bringing back their 1993 jersey.
Yep.
The Bucks.
The Timberwolves brought back those KG era ones. Yep. I think last year.
The Bucks are bringing back the class like the Bucks
the
on
buck
their
on
the one
it.
With the buck on it. So it's come to my attention that the NBA it has to be an anniversary to bring back a jersey like that. It has to be an anniversary. So I guess the year for that would have been last year, and it didn't happen. So there's going to be a new jersey, a new city edition, and what I was told was something different and that has not been done by the team before. I guess you could say the past couple of city editions had not been done by the team either, though, right?
Yeah, so, definitely.
Like the sack helmet we're seeing on the wall right now from the COVID year, it's with the checkers on it. And
yeah, to me, this looks like a gas station jersey, I believe is what I called it.
It does kind of look like we're going to like Talladega or something.
It just to me, look, you know how like they have like generic gear at gas stations sometimes? Like you'll go to like some, you'll be driving to LA and like at the Grapevine, they'll have like shirts and random cowboy stuff. It looks like something that someone, or like a flea market jersey or something. And then, yeah, I mean, there's the baby blue one that they pulled out. I think that was the first city edition one. Garbage. Obviously, the red ones that they put out, hot. Garbage.
So bad, dude. The Sactown ones?
Yes, the Sactown
ones. Nike just did the same jersey, but they changed the color. Let's change the thread to red.
Yep.
That's what I'm saying with this jersey.
Garbage.
It sounds like it won't just be Nike making it and saying deal with it. It sounds like the Kings are going to have a say in what this city edition is. But looking at the ones, again, in like Chris, the two are on our wall right now.
Yeah.
They need a... And I like last year's City Edition.
I do, too.
I actually really liked last year's Sactown jersey. I loved it. I would have given it
an 80, 85 if I was a teacher.
If that was their jersey, if they announced that's going to be just our jersey or one of our primary jerseys, I'd say, great. Because I'm kind of over the...
I was going to ask you about this one right here, the black jersey that they put out that is essentially just their road jersey, I think, or is it their home jersey? But it's black and has the S that I believe they say is like the Sacramento River all throughout it. I personally am not a fan of the S all throughout the logo or all throughout the jersey, but I agree with you. I'm kind of done with that alternate one. And I really liked the one last year. I liked the quail S thing.
I loved it.
I think that's cool.
I love the solid black jersey too. Like it's just solid black. The purple on it was really nice. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I believe the number font also was like the throwback font, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm wondering like what the long-term plan is with the jersey. I mean, usually when you look at, I'm looking at the Kings' history of jerseys. They've gone to a new uniform on average. So when they moved here in 85, they went 5 years. Then from 90 to 94, five seasons. 94 to 2002, that was a classic, the mm-hmm. Kings jerseys that we grew up watching, mm-hmm. the ones that we wanted to bring back. That was 8 years. Then after that, 6 years with the Crown Sacramento, 6 years with the Sacramento, the ones at home, which were kind of ugly, which I didn't like mm-hmm. very much. 3 years with the old school logo, but on new like a new kind of concept with the numbers in the center. And then now, ever since then, which is going to be – this is going to be our sixth season having the jerseys we have now, which have gone from Adidas to Nike. Mm-hmm. So I think that they're due for a change in the next year or two. Mm-hmm. So
interesting.
I'm just wondering where they're going to go with it. But I like the idea of going back to the old lettering. Just they tried it before and it didn't work, and I just don't know if they're going to do that again. But what's your favorite? What was your favorite? Okay, let's go ahead and say – I'm going to assume that the old like old school
O2s. We'll
take those out. So what is your favorite jersey, like your era outside of then?
I think my favorite jersey they've put out is the throwback one. I can't remember the royal blue one that they put out a couple years ago. I can't remember what year it was. But I remember them, like Buddy was the one that was showcasing it at the Fan Fest. He like wore it and was repping it.
I love those.
I think it was the royal blue and red. I can't remember what.
That was like a City Edition jersey, right?
I think so. Yeah, they wore it. They didn't wear it too many times that season, no, actually.
That was like a play on the 1990 through 94 jersey, which I'm looking at right now. Here's what they looked like. I need to get a magic marker for my iPad. It's these guys right here.
Which, yes, I mean, those ones exactly. Yep.
If you're listening at home, you can just type in
1990 to 94.
Kings 1994. If you know, you remember if you watched them back then. Yeah. But I like that a lot. And I honestly, we've talked about it. Some of you might not like to hear this, but I wouldn't mind if they went back to the old color scheme at some point. Or maybe like try to like maybe make it a darker blue and a darker red. I mean, if anything, and maybe incorporate like a dark gray. I don't know. And it just,
I agree with you.
And black, I'm cool with the purple and I like it. And I just don't know if maybe at some point they move away from it. I mean, you see some kind of work that some teams are moving away from their old colors. Just, I can't see them ever doing that, at least not for a while, but.
I think they might. I definitely think they might. And we've heard rumblings that there are people up high who do want to change the Kings jersey or the team's main colors. I don't think they'll be able to do it. Like you said, I think there's just kind of too much of in the community. It just means too much. And I think they'd probably have to wait for them to be good to like kind of rebrand themselves almost.
Because I guess they're still in the process of, I mean, they opened Golden One Center, 6 years ago? Mm-hmm. And they kind of were making that a whole new brand thing. Yeah. They had a new logo. So I guess it wouldn't make sense to change that all.
Exactly.
Tear it all down already.
Great point as well.
Like their logo is pretty new still.
Yes, definitely. Their logo's,
I like the old logo better, but that's besides the point.
Yeah, that's interesting too. I do like the look of the old logo. I get the simplicity of the new one. It's, you know, the old one kind of did have a lot going on with the swords and the ribbon and the
it's classic
to me. It looks great. It's
how about you get your thought off first though.
I don't know, my only thought is as someone who we just went through a rebrand here at Sacktown Sports 1140, as someone who makes graphics and like has to like take into consideration like colors and color schemes and things like that, I will say purple is not the greatest base color to work with. You're kind of limited, and just in general, it's kind of hard to find like color matches that look good. I do think the Kings purple, white, and gray does look good, but it's kind of limiting in terms of branding and how cool you can make stuff look.
That makes sense. What about the cursive font? Like, if the Kings, we saw with the Sactown kind of a little bit, but the cursive Kings, like, how do you feel
that
they made
on that the one that's on that jersey as well?
I'm looking at, like, from right here, just looking back at what they had when they came here, mm-hmm. right? And then even, I think, well, they haven't had it since, really. They had it on those blue mm-hmm, city
those
editions.
Blue ones, yeah.
How would you feel if they made that kind of back to the classic or their primary logo or jersey logo instead of just like the block Kings numbers?
It'd be interesting. I think they would try and modernize it, and I think that would be where the criticism could come in, because I do think that looks really good. I think that Kings look solid. They have the crown, I think, above, like, dotting the eye, correct?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. I think that's cool. I just, yeah, I think that they would try and put a modern twist on it, and I'm not sure that that's something that really needs to be modernized. I like it. I don't trust it. I don't trust that they would do a good job with it. That's more what it is.
Yeah, it'll be very intriguing to see how this all pans out. Mm-hmm. So I would expect the City Edition jersey, which will drop in November, by the way. Yes. The City Edition will be out in November. The Kings will not announce it before the beginning of the regular season. I'd expect it's going to be something different. It might be from what I was told, they seem confident in it, but I bet they were confident in the last couple of things too. Mm-hmm. And while last year's was great, I loved last year's. It was again, I give it an A. The COVID year, the 2020 season with the racing stuff on it, just like, I don't know. So I don't know. Jerseys like are mostly polarizing though. There's not many, you know,
definitely
like the Yankee pinstripes or the Raptors purples, like the people everyone likes. Like, there's not very many that
it's hard to be neutral on a jersey.
Yeah. But yeah. See what happens.
I just kind of don't trust that. I don't trust Nike, and I don't really. I don't want to say I don't trust the Kings branding, but nothing that the Kings have really ever, even in like in the team store, I'm very unimpressed with just the amount of like cool stuff they have. You and I were talking about
the simplicity.
The
they need to be have more simple. I just want a Kings t-shirt without having like a million things on it. Like, mm-hmm. I just want like a solid t-shirt with like a Kings logo, maybe like a Nike logo on it too. Mm-hmm. Just like a solid shirt, like a dry fit. But on the back, there'll be like a giant lion or something. And it's like, mm-hmm. I know it's about branding, but I just don't want all of that on my back. So
interesting. Well, until next time. You know what I was going to say? This is very random. Not random, but kind of useless information. The Sactown jerseys of last year that they, or I don't, they weren't Sactown, but the City Edition jerseys that they put out last year were announced on November 1st. So I would expect probably the same date for these. So be on the lookout for that. I think that's it for us as well.
Yeah, Tuesday.
Back Tuesday. I don't think there's anything on the horizon, but, you know, news is always dropping. Be sure to follow me and Frankie on Twitter. Be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast so that you can get all your episodes as they come out. We appreciate you all listening. Thank you so much. Do you have any shout outs or anything you want to give?
Shout out to the New York Yankees for getting one hit when I went to go watch them play at the Coliseum. That was sick.
Can you give me the Yankees record against the A's? You told me the other day and I was flabbergasted.
They're 12-25 at the Coliseum since 2012. It's like a 30% winning percentage.
Unreal.
It's their worst at any stadium away from any road stadium. And I've gotten to see them go 1-6 over the past 5 years.
Yeah.
And I'm
Which
going
is
to
incredible.
Boston. I'll be in Boston in like a week and a half, so that's going to be really fun to watch them lose halfway, or I'm sorry, all the way across the country. All the way across. The whole way.
Yep.
Anyways, thanks, Yanks.
Thanks. So if the Kings suck this year, we know who to blame. It's you. For Frankie Carnicelli, I'm Chris Watkins. Thank you all for listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We'll be right back. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big money at Menards. Add comfort to your life with Menards' great selection of Serta mattresses. Find the perfect mattress that fits your size and firmness needs. Hurry in today and pick up a Serta Gel memory foam mattress in a box on sale now through May 27. Take control of your comfort with Serta mattresses at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.